from the heart of the Forest City, this is a Craig Needles podcast brought to you by Lexus of London. Now here's your host, Craig Needles.
Craig Needles podcast, Friday roundtable here on a beautiful and not quite as hot as early in the week, June 17th. The Craig Needles podcast, of course, is brought to you by our friends over at Lexus of London, and you can find us at londonnewstoday.ca and classicrock981.com. Let's begin with first telling you who's here. Craig, good idea. We've got Sean Lukowitz, former political candidate, who's here, as well as Jesse Roger, executive director of Inova, and Blackburn Media News Manager Scott Kitching. Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Let's begin with a story that happened at council this week. And the Free Press broke it that Trooper Mark Wilson, who had his name on a street sort of near the Hail Trafalgar overpass and at a park sort of in the northwest end of the city, was not only charged but pleaded guilty to assault when he was in the military 2 years before he died in Afghanistan. Then all this stuff gets named after him. Council voted to remove his name from these two things. And on top of that, they're continuing a review of other things in the City of London that are named after individuals just to make sure they align with the city's values and so forth. Your reaction to the decision that council made here, was it the right call? I know that Wilson's family was not thinking it was the right call, but to me, council didn't really have a whole lot of choice here. Like, this is not an allegation. This is something that someone has pleaded guilty to.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that I think they made the right choice. It's always, you know, complicated when you name things after people. And it's obvious in this case, as opposed to a lot of other cases, that they did not do their due diligence in terms of, you know, checking out the background and the history of people. And, you know, I think as we move forward, if we continue to name things after people, and that's, you know, arguable whether or not we should, I think the expectation is that that kind of due diligence will be done. You know, I know that council struggled a bit with the decision and, you know, the different elements of it. But, you know, of course, think about the person that he sexually assaulted and the way that she would feel seeing his name on signage around a city or on a park. And, you know, there's no question it needs to be removed.
I just want to say for clarification purposes, although I know sexual assault was part of the allegation, what he did plead guilty to was just straight up assault, not sexual assault. I'm not sure that matters in this case when it comes to the decision that that politicians are making, but it certainly is worthy of being mentioned here. Jesse, what were your thoughts on how this went down?
Well, I thought it was the right choice for council to make that decision. We are the only municipality in the country that has a pillar in our strategic plan that is about keeping women and girls safe. So I think it's in alignment with the commitments that this council has made. So it made a lot of sense. I definitely think about this woman who stepped forward, but I also think that there's a lot of people watching and listening, a lot of survivors listening. And I think it's about the message that we're sending to them about how we value them, their story, their experience, and their learning when these things happen, who is safe and who is not safe to share their experiences of violence. So I think it's always really important to keep that in mind when we talk about these things and happening in community.
Yeah, you have to. And again, I think it came down to, and this is something that in the Free Press piece that that Randy Richmond did, the husband of the woman who was assaulted by Mark Wilson said, I wouldn't want to live on a street named after a guy who did this. And I think that's kind of the response that people who live on that street gave to counselors when they were asked about the situation, Scott.
And I think, honestly, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, I certainly don't envy any of the counselors who had to make this decision. That being said, it was really the only decision they could make. This was really kind of a situation where there was no off ramp. I mean, you had one choice here, and that choice was to make the decision to remove his name. It's all around an unfortunate situation, but I think council did make the right decision. And what it comes down to is exactly what everyone here has said is that we in this situation have to think about this woman, about the victim, and how she would feel knowing that there's a city in this country where there's a park, there's a street named after someone who assaulted her. And that, you just can't have that. What I do find interesting about the whole thing, and I had this conversation with my 15-year-old daughter, because she saw that, you know, she pays attention to the news, and she saw the story and wanted to talk about it. And what came out of our conversation was this idea that it's almost proof positive that all of us are complicated. Nothing is black and white. There are shades of gray, and all of us are complicated individuals who cannot be really assessed on one action or one accomplishment or one failure. We are complicated people. We do good things. We do bad things. And no one should be really, you know, you can't, just as you can't judge a person solely by their successes, you also can't judge someone solely by their failures. That being said, if you have this type of failure on your life record, if we want to call it that, then I don't know that your name should be on a street or on a park. And I think at the end of the day, you know, it's very easy for us to sit back and say, oh, what a, and I don't, I should preface this by saying, I don't know, I haven't heard anyone say this, but I suspect that there are probably people who have, who take a look at just the 2004
case, whatever,
and say, you know, what a terrible person. Get his name off everything. That's part of who he was. A part that I'm sure if he were still alive today, he would have liked nothing more than to go back and not be that person in that moment. But it just shows me anyway that we are all of us are complicated, and we are not, you know, we shouldn't be judged, I suppose, solely on our successes or our failures. But I do think, again, council really, really didn't have much of a choice in this regard, because again, you can't put names on parks or streets of people who have assaulted women. I mean, you just can't do it. So I think the right choice was made here.
Yeah. I think that, you know, Scott, you bring up a good point, and I think Jesse could probably speak to this well, is just this idea that, you know, we tend to think of people who do, you know, whether it be assault or sexual assault or whatnot, as like being one thing and something other than the people that we know, the people that live on our street, the people that we would elevate to a place where we would choose to put their name on a sign. And that is the myth that needs to be constantly challenged, because that is not true. That is not true. It is the people in our lives, the people that we know, that do these sorts of things. And so, you know, questioning this idea of any type of hero or heroine or any type of like worshiping of people and putting people on a pedestal as if, you know, they are one thing and worthy of like this huge commemoration, I think is questionable. And, you know, the more that we can accept that people are complicated, as you say, and not excuse these kinds mm-hmm. of behaviors, you know, the more I think we deconstruct the myth that it's only, you know, so-called like monsters or, yeah. you know, bad people who 100%. Do these kinds of things. And I love to hear that you're having that conversation with your young daughter.
Yeah. I look at it and I understand the argument, and I talked to Phil Millar, who's the lawyer for Wilson's family, who said, look, he's not around to defend himself, to talk about what happened or clarify any of that stuff. I'm willing to accept that argument when it comes to passing judgment upon, hey, whether, you know, what kind of person you were, any of that stuff. But to me, if your name's going to be on a street, if your name is going to be on a park, you've kind of got to be above reproach, right? And that clearly is not the situation here, no matter what anyone, like, I don't think anyone could or should disagree with that. Once you have the guilty plea in there.
Yeah. And I think, Sean and Scott, you took the words right out of my mouth. Like, we are, humans are fallible, right? Mm-hmm. These kinds of things happen, and they're not happening in isolation. And we always say, you know somebody or you know multiple people in your life who have been experiencing gender-based violence. The flip of that is you can say that you know people in your life who have perpetrated gender-based violence. And it's oftentimes when we find out these folks have done these things who are in our life, and the answer is usually, I can't believe that, they've never been like that with me. Well, of course not. Nobody is 100%, you know, perfect or kind or good all of the time. And the opposite is true as well. And so I think it's important, if we also want to have a conversation about how we're going to end gender-based violence, we need to stop villainizing or making people out to be monsters, because they're humans. And if there's any hope to rehabilitate, if there's any hope to reduce rates of gender-based violence and femicide and violence against women, we have to realize that we can do better. And when we don't have that conversation, it comes out of the equation. And that's a really scary place for me to be as a executive director of a women's organization.
Let me follow up with that, because you mentioned, you know, people are fallible and people make mistakes. That is absolutely the case. So we want to have it so, obviously, someday, and you and I have talked about this before, Jesse, you're out of work. That's, you know what I mean?
I would love to work myself out of a job.
Yeah,
yes.
that is something that we'd like to see happen. If people are fallible, and so are they making these mistakes? How do we get to the point where, okay, yeah, you've screwed up, but at the same time, we don't want you to do this ever at all? You know what I mean? Those two things are kind of competing with each other a little bit.
I think it's a continuum, right? Yeah. There are some folks who commit crimes and they need to go through a criminal justice system. That needs to happen. We have a program at ANOVA called Man Made, and that's a program for young men who haven't committed assault, but they've maybe taken a couple of steps in a direction that we're not super comfortable with. So it's a way for them to have some conversations about what healthy masculinity looks like, what to do when you're kind of dealing with rejection and sexual rejection. And the results from that are amazing. You gather a group of men together who can have really honest, safe conversations together, and they leave understanding what rape culture is. They leave understanding how they can be a better partner and a better community member. So we can do this if we invest time and energy into the proactive prevention spaces that we need to be in. So
and these are men who are directed there by the legal system because of something that's gone awry or something along those lines?
Not necessarily the legal system, but through other community connections. And it's been a great project so far.
That's something. So I want to ask you all about naming things after people in general then, because I've always kind of defended it. And look, we've been through stories where, hey, let's take, you know, John A. McDonald's name off of this, or take, you know, this Jean Sauvé is an example here in London. Let's take that name off, which, again, I'm fine with both those things. And there's always been the argument, hey, how about we just stop naming things after people in general? And I'm always kind of like, oh, you know, some people are good enough. But this story this week has kind of made me pause and think to myself, maybe we should not do that anymore. Where do you stand on just naming things in the city of London after people who have lived here, or whatever it happens to be, or people who have lived in Canada or whatever?
I think realistically, unless you are going to do really, really extensive vetting, then I think, yeah, maybe we should seriously consider not doing it. Because inevitably, because what we've talked about, I mean, it's not... It's entirely possible that you could even miss something in that vetting process. Mm-hmm. And then you end up somewhere down the line, so you've named something after someone, and despite the fact that you think you've done a pretty good background check on them, you might miss something. And then you find yourself in a position where something comes out about that person. So maybe it is a good idea to just maybe not do it anymore.
I think I'd love for us to really just complicate the whole notion of naming altogether, right? Mm-hmm. So it's easy, to go to the place of we shouldn't name it after people because we have these experiences of individual people doing individually bad things. But if we look at it in the context of sort of larger systems of the world we live in, and we name things after companies, we, you know, have stolen land from Indigenous people that we're naming streets after, like all of these sort of layers of things. I think, you know, the way that I would like to see it approached is more from like really just thinking about why we're naming something and what is behind that, because I feel like it's just too easy to say, you know, let's stop naming him after people. And there's lots of reasons we should. Obviously, this is, you know, the hero worship, all that type of thing. But I think there's another conversation that needs to happen around, you know, companies. We sell rights to public institutions, public centers, to corporations and companies that we know maybe don't treat their workers well, that perhaps have other, you know, illegal issues that they've been involved with, and they get a buy often, whereas individuals don't. And why is that the case?
Interesting question. Jesse, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think it's complicated. And I think when you know better, you do better in terms of naming things after whether it's people or corporations. I also come from a nonprofit world where it is common for us to name whether it's buildings or even, you know, meeting rooms.
If someone's
or
cutting you
anything.
A check, right? Like that's
part of
it.
If a donor
right?
is there and yeah. as a nonprofit and we're sort of looking for money everywhere we can to save as many pennies as we can. It gets complicated, and those conversations are starting to come up for us. And so I think it's not a one and done. There's no one solution, but I think hopefully this starts to open up a conversation about how those decisions are made. And I think that's what needs to happen.
Yeah, we'll see what the City of London comes up with. They're still kind of going through the process here, and I hope that they sort of have a fulsome look at this and make some proper decisions. Because even if you look at, you know, is our Dundas Street named after the same Dundas that the Toronto one's named after? Because that guy wasn't a very good dude. Like, you know what I mean? And Dundas is a long street, and changing addresses on that street is an expensive thing to do. So there's all sorts of different factors at play here. I want to watch another story, which is not completely dissimilar, sadly, to the one we were just discussing. But first, I do want to tell you that the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London. Lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. Hockey Canada is in the midst of what I would call, perhaps scandal is a good word. There was a settlement that was given to a woman who, in court filing, said that she was assaulted by 8 members of the 2018 World Junior Team at the Delta Armories Hotel here in London at a golf tournament in the summer of 2018. So more than 4 years ago now. This is something that's come up in Ottawa. Karen Vecchio, the Member of Parliament for Elgin Middlesex London, was on this podcast this week saying that politicians in Ottawa want more answers here. They want to figure out what happened, and they want to figure out, and this is something that Karen was talking about at the Status of Women Committee, which she's on. She wants to hear more about the problem that we have surrounding sexual assault in sports, which is a very real problem. And this is a problem that, by the way, if we just look at hockey in the last year, has impacted both men and women. Now, more so women, you would think, just on the societal scale, but male players as well. It's not just something that happens to women, sadly. So what should Ottawa be doing about this? And what was your reaction to hearing about this this story that happened again right here in London?
Who'd like to start? I honestly, you know what? I mean, I'll go ahead and start, I suppose, even though I come at this from a, I suppose, I don't know, I'm not even sure how I would describe the position I'm in here. Because, I mean, having grown up playing sports and never, I mean, I can't say that I saw much of this kind of behavior. I heard, I mean, there was talk, like, you know, the kind of talk that you hear in a locker room. I don't know what it's like today, but I know, you know, 30 some odd years ago, well, 40 years ago, 35, when I was a teenager, I heard some horrible, horrible things. And I want to believe that things have gotten better. I don't know that they have. And this particular story, this Hockey Canada story, I mean, it could not have turned my stomach more. You know, I hate to use that cliche, you know, as a father of daughters, but there is some truth to it. I mean, I think even if I was childless, I would still be outraged by it. But just, you know, you look at what happened to that poor woman. And it's a mixture of rage and sadness that something like this would happen. But perhaps even as critical is just the notion that nothing got done about this. And there, and you cannot tell me that word of this did not leak out. Yeah. There were 8 players in that hotel room, as I understand it. You cannot tell me that word did not get out. People knew. And I'd have no doubt that knowledge went all the way up to the coaching staff, all the way up to the executive of Hockey Canada. You can't tell me that they didn't know. And for them to do essentially nothing about it is, I mean, even though we're on a podcast and we can swear, I won't, but it's bloody outrageous. It is, and it's infuriating. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things where it makes you just think, you know what? Burn it all down. Burn it all down. Yes. And start again. Because this is so awful and so disgusting that this happened and nothing got done about it. This poor woman had to take it upon herself, mm-hmm, to get even like a small measure of justice. In this case, it's financial justice, but it's so infuriating that the feeling I get is that somebody thought, we can make this go away. Yep. And no one, yep, will ever know.
Absolutely.
Yep. And that is just, like, it makes my skin crawl.
And to me, people are going to say, well, this is, you know, allegations and things have not been tested in court. That's true. But from a logic perspective, she says, here's what happened to me. And Hockey Canada cuts her a check. Mm-hmm. Feels to me like they're essentially saying, all right, we think that this is pretty close to what happened here, right? Like, that's...
At least something happened.
Yeah, yeah,
something,
exactly,
happened.
Yeah, and I mean, for too many reasons, we cannot count on the justice system to be the determinator of, you know, whether or not, you know, violence occurred or whatnot. There's all kinds of reasons that's problematic. And, you know, hesitating and jumping in is just, you know, Scott, like, just that fury that's so, like, it just goes deep, this one. One, because, you know, it's not an unusual situation. Like, it's outrageous, mm-hmm, and yet... this is sports. And so I think in lots of ways, Karen Vecchio's call for looking at violence in sports and you know, assault in sports and all these types of things is really important. I'm less concerned about the money. I know that, you know, as somebody who's, you know, been a candidate and been in government, I should be saying that, you know, I'm more concerned about the covering up, the fact that these, yeah, individuals were able to continue on and ascend to what would be like the biggest, you know, point in hockey, that the accountability and the impact on them was what. And yet this woman will live with this for the rest of her life, and her family and her friends. And then, you know, as Jesse said earlier, survivors who are watching this and know that, like, what this is bringing up to them in terms of what they've experienced, and that just, you know, reality that we know that they get away with it. Mm-hmm. And how deeply that cuts, to just know that happens over and over again, and men will fall forward and continue on their own trajectory of success. And in this case, you know, making lots and lots of money.
You mentioned the money, not the money that the players are making, but the money that went to the woman here. There, Karen was asking, hey, wait a minute, did money from the government of Canada, taxpayer dollars, go to paying off the settlement? Which I understand why, if you work in Ottawa, that is, mm-hmm, that is relevant to you. But to me, and I think to just about everybody, we've kind of got bigger fish to fry here from a systemic perspective.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's time to sort of figure out what's going on from that perspective. Jesse, your thoughts on this story?
When I heard about this, the rage was the primary feeling. And then the secondary thought in my head was, again, mm-hmm, again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I did an interview with a hockey magazine, not like maybe 2-3 months ago, I can't remember, not too long ago, about Logan Mayo.
Yeah.
And then we had what happened with the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
Right? Like, again and again and again. I did work with Sheldon Kennedy years ago when he talked about the sexual assault that he experienced as he was going through hockey. I am so sick and tired of investigations and inquests into figuring out, we know what's going on. We know what's happening. It's time for action. Like, that's where we're at. This is an organization that has millions of dollars. They're not strapped for cash. They can make investments to make actual changes. And that's, like, I think it's important to know where the money came from. Sure. I think it's important to really respect the survivor who does not want to be named and, mm-hmm, who does not want to participate in any of these pieces, but we can allow her to live in peace and still have a conversation about Hockey Canada, hockey in general, because we've known about this for years and years and years. So now's the time for some investment that actually is going to see some change. And this is, we didn't get here overnight, right? So it's going to be a long journey. And so there needs to be an investment that we see across that organization, and a conversation that we start to have with one another, because hockey is so ingrained in our culture.
It very much is. And there's a lot of differences, obviously, between these stories, you know, who the victim is, and between the what happened with the Blackhawks, what happened with Sheldon Kennedy, what happened with this Hockey Canada story. But to me, the one thing that it keeps coming back to is the person or the people who are perpetrating this have some power, and they've decided to wield that power in order to do something horrific, be it sexually abusing a child. In the case of Sheldon Kennedy, he was not an adult at the time. Be it sexually abusing a player in the case of what happened to Kyle Beach, or be it in the case of, let's call it what it is, this is a gang rape of a woman. If that's what the allegations were in this statement of claim, which prompted Hockey Canada to cut a check. So it's a gang rape. I know it's a stomach-turning term to use, but that's what happened. We've got to be honest about it. Mm-hmm. To me, there's a problem here. And it's not just in sport either. You know, you look at religious institutions or political organizations. I have power, and therefore I can do this to you, and you're not going to be able to do anything about it. And sport's an example, but it happens in a lot of other walks of life as well.
Mm-hmm. And it's because the systems will protect you.
Right.
And they will, they're actually not even protecting you, they're protecting themselves.
Right.
And it happens over and over and over again. And so, you know, as you said, it just, yeah, it runs deep.
I think, you know, there's a misogyny problem in sports in general, I think. I mean, and it goes beyond just things of a sexual nature. I mean, I just think, like, the misogyny and is just so ingrained and rooted in sports as they exist. I mean, I think about my sister-in-law is a retired high school teacher, and when she was still teaching, she told me this story, and it completely blew me away. And it's just really, in a lot of ways, it's just a microcosm of the entire thing. So she chaperoned her high school's two rugby teams to this tournament. The tournament was held at a private school. This is in kind of central eastern Ontario. And so her high school sent a boys rugby team and a girls rugby team to this big tournament. At this private school, they had two rugby fields. They had the main stadium, which was a beautiful, well manicured, had bleachers, electronic scoreboard, all of that stuff. And then they had the lower practice field, which was a bare bones, no frills, you know, really just exactly what it was. It was a practice field. So the main field, the stadium, was used for the boys' championship and the boys' consolation final. The consolation final was going on at the exact same time as the girls' championship. Where do you think the girls' championship game was played? It was played on the practice field, while the boys' consolation final was played in the main stadium. And that's just one example of so many. Right. And you just think if that's the kind of thing that just happens without a second thought, well, of course, you're creating a culture in which there is this kind of male entitlement. Mm-hmm. And what happened in this hotel room is the, I guess you could say, I mean, it's kind of the logical conclusion of that. Right. I mean, it's this entitlement and this misogyny that, you know, it just makes you think, like, how do we, like, we've got to somehow attack the root of that in hopes that maybe somewhere down the line, we never have to worry about this other thing ever happening again. And I don't know if that's possible or how long it will take, but my God, we've got to try anyway. Because, I mean, again, the more we think about this, what this poor woman endured in that hotel room, it just, like, something has to be done. Something must be done. We may not at this point be able to hold the individuals who did this accountable, but we've got to do something to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yeah, and that's what I would hope that part of, as I understand, there's hearings happening on Monday.
Yes.
And important to know where this money went and if it was government money, sure. But if I'm a taxpayer and my money is going to Hockey Canada, I want to know a little more about what they're...
I want to make sure we're not cutting any more checks.
Yeah, I want to make sure...
If we're talking about this from a dollars perspective.
Yeah, I want to make sure that if taxpayer dollars are going to be invested in this institution, I'm just not only concerned about where the money for this lawsuit sort of check came from. I'm concerned about other things. I want to know what the culture shift is going to be and what the investment is going to how that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's my question too. I hope that comes up at the hearing because I'm not, you know, I think that the Hockey Canada has already said that the money from the settlement, didn't come from the government. Great. That doesn't let the government off the hook in terms of funding organizations that we know participate in this kind of behavior. And so, you know, there's some accountability there that hopefully will be discussed in the hearing. And, you know, it won't just be kind of brushed away because if it, you know, comes out that really none of the government money went to the settlement. To me, that's not the issue at all.
Yeah, and also,
I mean, I'm glad it didn't.
Yes,
for sure.
Yeah,
but
there's other things to figure out here. Yeah, and I'll say this: this is something that appears, at the very least, the New Democrats and the Conservatives in Ottawa have some agreement on sort of what should happen here next and what the next step should be. At least that's the conversation that I had with Karen Vecchio, and she sort of expressed that. So I would hope and think that the Liberals in Bloc Québécois would get on board. I guess we're going to have to wait and see on that. But the Conservatives and the NDP seem to have some similar ideas as far as what the next step should look like here. Last thing on this story before we wrap up, we mentioned maybe these particular players aren't going to be aren't going to have accountability for this. How do we ensure this doesn't happen again if there isn't players that are kind of on the hook for it? And maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way, but it's hard to encourage people to stop doing things that they seem to think that they can do without showing some examples of here's what will happen to you that's bad if you go ahead and do it. Maybe I'm looking at it the wrong way. Jesse, what do you think?
I think I always start with the survivor and finding out what it is that they want to do. And I can completely understand why she didn't want to go to the cops. That's not usually a very successful way to go about doing this. And it can be
London police. Sorry. Yeah. I will say that, I think back to the Unfounded story.
Yeah.
This is not a place where they've got a spotless track record. Not that there's a police service in Canada that does, but the track record here on these types of investigations for them, not very good.
I think that there is, there are changes being made, which I'm really happy about, but the impact of decades of survivors being belittled and not believed it's a heavy burden that survivors have to carry for a really long time. So I think that there's a system overhaul that needs to happen. And I think we need to start with listening to the individual survivors about what they need. And then I think it's a responsibility of the system to figure out how they're going to prevent this. And then it's going to be by actions, right? You got to prove to people that you are a safe organization, you are a safe person to come and talk to and to share these things with. Otherwise, we're not going to get anywhere. This is a long game we're playing, right?
Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of goes back to Scott's point, and I really like how you tied in the way that misogyny shows up in these sort of what would seem minor in comparison, right? The way that a field is used, the amount of money that may go to men's sport as opposed to women, but it's all part of the same picture, as you said, of entitlement, where it starts to build up this belief that we are more important and we can get away with these things, and that others are less. And in this case, a lot of time it is women. And that's not to say, of course, that men have also been abused within mm-hmm. these sports systems, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. But that roots in misogyny as well. And so remembering that and how do you root that out? It's a long, long process. And it doesn't have to always come down to individual accountability. But when it does happen next time, we want to see some accountability.
And you mentioned the point about, men being
on
abused.
The survivors.
Yeah.
By the survivors. Definition.
Right. You mentioned the point about men being abused, and you look at, according to the Kyle Beach statement of claim, the other guys on the team knew that he was abused, and they, some of them, not all of them, and he didn't name names as to who, called them a bunch of anti-gay slurs, which I'm not going to repeat, and things along those lines. So it's a problem that impacts a lot of people. But yeah, there's, if we want to call it the toxic masculinity thing or whatever phrasing we want to use, but there's something here and they're willing to turn that on men too, obviously, and in pretty horrific ways. But clearly women are more often, sadly, the ones who wound up bearing the brunt of this. Want to talk about one more story before we wrap up here, and it's another one from City Hall this week. We don't have a lot of time, but green bins, which I started covering London City Council in 2007. I'm pretty sure that we talked about green bins in 2008. It's 2022, and we're not getting them until next year, maybe? There's a truck shortage, supply chain, blah, blah, blah. Either way, not happening, not coming. Frustrated by this, disappointed by this, or are you willing to chalk it up to something that no one really could have done a whole lot about?
Oh my goodness, I am with you. I have been watching this debate for years. And, you know, I post on Twitter, I went to the University of Guelph in 1992 and we had green bags. Like, you know, that was all it was 30 years ago. So if we do the math. So, you know, the fact that London is so far behind is frustrating and yet just feels so, you know, I hate to say it, but like very London, mm-hmm. right? To just kind of, you know, drag our feet, you know, be slow about it. And, you know, supply issues are supply issues. Do I blame them for this particular decision? Not really. There's maybe not a lot they could do about this. Fine. But there's a reason we're sitting here in 2022 still waiting for green bins. And I should add, and I do want to say that, you know, because I am part of the HEAL Lab at Western, that, you know, in terms of food waste and whatnot, you know, the research that's been done by people like, you know, Dr. Paul Vanderwerf and others is that, you know, green bins aren't necessarily the best way to reduce food waste, mm-hmm. That, you know, people throw out like $600 worth of food every single year. But at the same time, it does feel, it is something that I think most people want in London, and you know, and that we should be doing.
Yeah. That's and if it comes down to just, even if it's not diverting food waste, it's just like, let's just get this not in a landfill. That's, you know, probably worth the price of admission, because it turns out that buying land to bury your garbage in is not cheap. People don't like to do that, and nor should they. Jesse, your thoughts on green bins?
I remember being in university in like 2004, 2005, and going to University of Guelph to visit friends and being like, this is so cool. You have, what are these? And I'm like, oh, maybe we'll get them soon. And so, yeah, I'm on the same. I'm like, yeah, this is a conversation we've been having for a long time. It's frustrating. And I think food is so expensive right now mm-hmm. that I think we're all being really more mindful of how we consume and what we consume. And it would be really wonderful if we could get an answer about what this is going to look like for our community sooner rather than later, but I'm not holding my breath.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to happen around the corner either. You'd think, well, July 2023, you know, we'll see.
I think that, you know, it's one of those things where the best time to do this was yesterday. The second best time is tomorrow. So if it means, you know, if we don't get it done until 2023, well, then I guess we don't get it done until 2023. But for heaven's sakes, let's get it done. Let's get it done.
Mm-hmm. I just worry too, though, that it starts to, you know, people start to lose the sense that we can do things to address, you know, climate change, that we can do things that may make a difference. And, you know, as somebody who, you know, has my own frustrations sometimes with City Hall, but yet is highly invested in people, you know, being engaged in government, I just want people to feel like, you know, when they want something to happen, that it will happen, and to see it, you know, follow through. And, you know, the delay in all this, and then the delay, and then the delay, and then the delay doesn't inspire that kind of confidence.
Yeah, no, I'm not super confident either. I used to be thinking about green bins from the perspective of, well, not enough people are going to use this, so is it really worth it? But then I kind of ran some numbers and looked at some data and like, okay, even if we only get like 30% uptake, it's probably still worth it. So let's just get it done. Now, I know that the city has composters they'll sell and things along those lines. So if you want to get rid of your food scraps in some other way, may I suggest that? No more time, because we've got places to go, people to see, and I've got to get out of the studio. So thank you very much to Shauna and Jesse and Scott for doing the roundtable this week. I appreciate it, everybody. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And I will remind you before I wrap up, the Craig Needles podcast is brought to you by Lexus of London, lifestyle with a drive. Your new Lexus is patiently waiting at Lexus of London, 1065 Warncliffe Road South, and online at lexusoflondon.com. You can find the Craig Needles podcast at classicrock981.com, londonnewstoday.ca, and on your favorite podcast app. We will talk to you next week.
The Craig Needles podcast is a presentation of the Blackburn Media Podcast Network.